Hey everybody, welcome back to Bikes and Big Ideas on the Blister Podcast Network. I'm David Golay, the bike editor at Blister, and you can check out everything we're doing and reviewing over at blisterreview.com. Okay, this week I am joined by Georgia Astle, who had a rather unconventional path into the mountain bike world and has done a whole lot of highly varied and interesting things within it, and sat down with Georgia to chat about all of it, including growing up in Whistler but not really mountain biking much as a kid, to finding her way into some very early success in gravity racing, and then moving into enduro, and eventually kind of into freeride as she has made that subsequent career evolution. And we chat about all of it and how she got here and the state of the sport, both on the enduro racing and women's freeride sides, and a whole lot more. It's a fun one, so I think you're going to enjoy it. So let's get right to it. This is Georgia Astle. Well, Georgia, great to sit down and chat, and looking forward to a little catch up on all the stuff you've been up to of late. How are you doing, and where are you these days?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm really good. I am actually in New Zealand, and it's the tail end of my double summer program here. So yeah, the past, like this winter and the winter before for the Northern Hemisphere, I decided to fly over to Queenstown and just press the skip button so I could stay on my bike year round. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah, that certainly sounds like it could be a lot worse. And I mean, any sort of anything in particular on the agenda over there, or just kind of hanging out and riding bikes?
This last trip, I had a bit more on the agenda, just event-wise. This year felt a little bit cruisier. I had a few events lined up that ended up getting canceled or postponed. Just like Proving Grounds was meant to be over here this year, but they had to postpone that just venue and budget reasons. And then also Summer Series Christchurch. Unfortunately, Christchurch hit by some fires, the natural disasters. So yeah, it's felt pretty cruisy, which is, it's been nice, but I'm excited to get back into a bit more of a regimented schedule and have stuff on the calendar to look forward to.
Yeah, well, we'll get into what is on the calendar in a few. Before we get there, I mean, I think kind of want to just have a bit of a chat about, you know, your career to date, because I think sort of your evolution through, continued evolution through the riding world and the various disciplines that you've been involved in has kind of been an interesting one, and just excited to hear your take on it. So, I mean, to start it off, like the fact that you grew up in Whistler, but got a arguably kind of comparatively late start in mountain biking, despite being right there, is probably worth touching on. So I don't know, tell us about it. Like, how did all that come about? And, you know, growing up in Whistler, like, what was your awareness of mountain biking before you got into it, you know, with the bike park looming right there and all the rest? Tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, I have very cool parents. They are both Canadian, but they learned how to ski in Australia in their like 30s and then decided to move to Whistler for a ski trip. So they moved to Whistler for the winters. And funnily enough, like, we were such a winter family. Skied, snowboard my whole life. I was really into hockey. And then they also have a love for windsurfing. So we spent summers away, like living in our RV, chasing the wind. They're big windsurfers. And in the winter, if we weren't skiing or growing up playing hockey, they would rent out their Whistler house. And same thing, we'd drive our RV down to Mexico and go spend a few months down in Mexico windsurfing, kiteboarding. So I always knew the biking was there. And like, I have an older brother that I chased. He was always on a mountain bike, but we just weren't really a biking family. So it's not like I never touched a bike, but I certainly didn't really know anything about the trails that we had in the backyard until a little bit later on. And I had friends that introduced me to mountain biking, and I was the kid that just wanted to try everything and wanted to keep up with whoever I was with. So as soon as I got a taste for it, I was hooked right away.
And so when did you start riding with some seriousness? Like, that initial foray? What are we talking here timeline wise?
So probably like the first summer, basically, that we didn't go away in the RV windsurfing, my parents were like, all right, guys, you get to each choose a summer camp. And I chose a biking one. And I was probably 11 or 12 at the time. And I was maybe 55, 60 pounds. And the bike that my dad got me was like a Kona Staff Junior. And I think it was about 50 pounds, like a hardtail.
Yeah, right. I was
going to
say, weighed as much as you did. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, same thing. Like, I was just so stoked to be outside. I absolutely loved it, but I did not enjoy the, like, the climbs that we had to do. And I got put with the advanced group because that's where all my friends are. And they all have biking families and proper bikes. So I got pretty turned off when I was that age. Just, I was like, oh, this is kind of gross. Like, we were going on massive missions when I was that young, just not used to it. And then fast forward a few years later, like, my mom has a mountain bike and her and her friends would go for rides. And at that point I was a runner. So I would follow her and her friends riding like these really sick bike trails in Whistler, but I would be running next to her because I just didn't think that I liked mountain biking until high school. We had a mountain bike league and I was the kid again. I would just sign up for every sport I could so I could skip school. So borrowed my mom's bike. Yeah, did these after school races, and some of them were proper like enduro-y tracks. So you'd do a climb and then that second half of the race was just downhill. It wasn't like a flat track. And that's where it changed for me. I was like pretty slow on the climbs, just getting over it. And then all of a sudden I would pass all the girls on the way down. They would pass me on the climbs. And that's when I was like, wow, I like this. It felt like how skiing and snowboarding did to me, just speed and kind of you can read the terrain. So that's where it all changed for me. And that was 2014-15 when I was at the end of high school. So that's right when enduro is becoming a thing. And that's when it was on my radar.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Thinking about the idea of myself climbing on what, like a 150-pound bike would be the proportional thing there. That sounds awful. Fuck that. So,
yeah, it would be like an e-bike without a battery.
Oh, like so much worse. I mean, way heavier than that. So, yeah, that does sound like a rough and inauspicious start to it. But, you know, glad you found your way in after a minute there. So, well, as you said, like you kind of got in as enduro was just getting off the ground as a race discipline and a professional pursuit, and I clearly had some aptitude for that side of things. And so tell us about the subsequent trajectory. Like, just, you know, you're relatively new to riding at this point still, and where did things go from there?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I just got a memory on Facebook actually yesterday, and it said 9 years ago today, and it was like the very first enduro race that I did, which is kind of crazy. So that first enduro race, I had my own bike, but I was the first bike that I got because I was doing all these cross-country races in high school was like a Trek Top Fuel, very much an XC bike. The seats stay, like you couldn't even drop the saddle because of how high the seat stay was. So I put myself way in the deep end by riding all these Whistler trails and just going over the bars, catapulting myself down. But at that point I was so determined and didn't really know any better. So my mom had a Giant Rain, like one of those classic ones. And I borrowed her bike, and that's when I did my first actual enduro races. And hers was too small for me. She is an extra small, and at that point I was the same height I am now, like 5'8", very much a medium. So pretty funny seeing those photos. But I did my first women's only enduro race on her bike in Whistler and actually won a stage against these women. And at that point, being a 16-year-old, like, you know, you're not very strong, and I had no idea what I was doing. So that's when a bunch of people came up to me and was like, Georgia, you're really good at this. Like, you should keep doing races. You should get a, like, this kind of a bike. And that was the start of it. So then the following year in grade 12, I was like, okay, I want to do this and I want to race enduro and downhill. And I went into the bike park for the first time that summer, bought an X rental downhill bike, and then the doorway was open. The world of possibilities when I found the bike park. It was like a light bulb went off.
How much did it feel like you had just been completely missing out at that point? Like, were you just like, what on earth was I doing up until now? Or?
I think at that point, like now there's, it's so crazy how many bike camps and kids under the age of 10 are in the bike park. Local kids, like it's basically a daycare at this point. One parent will drop them off the bike park, wait at the bottom, and there'll be a group of like 10 kids riding after school. But when I was in high school, it wasn't quite that crazy. So I didn't really feel like if I was missing out or there wasn't kids riding after school that I wasn't part of it. It just wasn't really as crazy popular as it is now, I would say.
No, right. That definitely scans. I guess I just meant more like, did you just, with the benefit of hindsight, feel like, oh, damn, why didn't I start this sooner?
Yeah, potentially. Then there's also the thing of, I think I was really drawn to it because all the other sports that I had done, my whole family did, and we did together. And then this was something that I kind of found on my own and got to like travel with other families to races or with friends. So I think I had more of a draw to it because I had a different way in than like my mom or dad teaching me and taking me to the races.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, there's a period where, you know, doing stuff with the family is just kind of what you want to do. And then at some point you get a little more individual spirit and want to strike out on your own doing something a little more novel, and just as you're growing up,
you
know, and that trajectory makes
sense. I think too, when I, because I was already so strong at other sports and I had such a drive for it, then it was like I went 110% into biking, whereas if I had biked from like 12 or 13 onwards, you kind of like fade out. Not always, but I think because I was at that perfect age of just brain off, all systems go, it was probably good timing for me. Although it would have been really nice having financial support of like my parents being into biking, because that was the hardest part. Biking was so expensive, and my dad always joked about how he really made sure that I didn't get into ski racing because they were like never going to be able to afford it. And then he laughed because he's like, you chose the second most expensive one, like downhill mountain biking.
Right. Well, and I think you were already playing the third most expensive sport in hockey, which like I grew up playing hockey as well. And so like, not a dissimilar evolution.
No.
There,
and my dad was hockey dad. Like he coached me all the way through, and I have so much respect for him because he was my coach all the way through, which meant that on weekends, instead of his days off skiing, he would be driving me to the city to go play hockey games. So he's like, yeah, my parents definitely went out of their way for my brother and I growing up.
Yeah, same thing for me and my sister. Like, we both played hockey, and just, it's a commitment, man. It's a lot. But here we are. And so I guess just let's keep this going. Like from there, you know, you obviously showed some pretty prompt aptitude for going fast down a hill on a bike and, you know, liked it. What were the next steps in kind of you just making this move to starting to make a career of it eventually? Kind of how did it go from there?
Yeah, I think it started off with, so the coach of the mountain bike team, who is also like lived down the road, and I already knew of her, she's a pro rider, Katrina Strand. She got me into this little grassroots sponsorship with two of my guy friends. And then that summer we all traveled together to it was the first year they had it, the provincial enduro series. So it was called the BC Enduro Series. And we had the coolest stops, like the best riding spots that I got to explore with my friends, camping all summer. So that was amazing. And that's, I think, what got me hooked on the whole idea of I was like, oh, I really like traveling to race. I love the road tripping. And I was quite good at the long distance stuff with enduro. So it was a natural fit. And then I think it was that following or the kind of mid to end of summer. So it was nearly Crankworx, which is in August, or back then it was. And I bought my first downhill bike and just lapped the park and was like, okay, I'm going to race Crankworx. And I hadn't even cleared A line yet. Didn't really know how to jump, but I signed up for the Air DH. And morning of the A line race, I was still in the junior category. I like learned how to clear the jumps. And that was my first intro to Crankworx. It was like just barely getting through A line, but I signed myself up. And then from there, that Crankworx met so many pros. And I wasn't even starstruck because I didn't even know who they were. I didn't follow biking. But I remember in 2014 doing a lap down some Lomer track with Travis Pastrana. That was the year that they all, like, the Nitro Circus team came up. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, I
don't think I knew that. It had happened, but cool.
Yeah, I'm like, I am riding with actual legends right now. And it's just normal. So then from then on, I think there is this thing of it felt achievable, and I knew that if I worked at it and went out to the races, saved up money, it was doable. So that was my glimpse into it, and I was just hooked from then on.
That's a pretty good way to get yourself hooked.
That's the amazing part about Whistler for me, is like, even I worked at this 18 and onwards, I worked at the coffee shop right at the bottom of the gondola. And it went from like my idols, people that I really looked up to, coming in and ordering coffee, to like a year or two later, we'd be like out doing laps. Like, these are my friends now, going on rides together. It's pretty crazy.
Yep. That's pretty cool. And so from there, I mean, you just kind of kept pushing forward with racing and, you know, take us through what happened next.
Yeah, so I focused on enduro for probably a solid season, and then I got invited onto this junior team that my friend's parents kind of owned. So again, they just basically brought me under their wing, and the next year, so my second year ever like racing, I went to Mont Saint Anne and did my first World Cup. That is how crazy this trajectory is for me. It's like, got a downhill bike, raced the national champ, clears A line, and then like not even 2 years later is at Mont Saint Anne racing a World Cup.
Yeah, wait, hang on, let's not gloss over that. Do I have it right that your first actual DH race, like not counting Air DH, was national champs?
Yeah, that was the first. I had done a couple Fat Wednesdays, so those are the local beer races. Yeah, yeah. And then I got, it was like the after party, so the Wednesday, and the following day, or I think the Friday, Finn and his dad were driving to Sun Peaks, which was national champs, and they were like, yeah, just come with us. So the next day, packed up my stuff, took the day off school, or I guess it was summer maybe at that point. And then national champs was my first race. I had just got like a new job as well. And I remember I was in Sun Peaks and I was like, hey, listen, I'm not going to make my shift tomorrow. I'm actually like doing a downhill race, which was a really good actual glimpse into how I was going to be as an employee at the shop. Because there was a lot of, hey, I'm not going to make it. I'm actually going to go do this race. Yeah, so that was my first.
You got better stuff to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So same thing. I was junior women. I would have been first year that year, and then came fourth in elite women, though. My time was fourth in elite. And I so nearly would have qualified for Mont Saint Anne or World Champs as my first year junior. But at that point, I was like, that's crazy. Like, I am new to this sport. I don't even know what that even means, you know? So glad I didn't go then. But the following year, I was second year junior, and nationals was still at Sun Peaks, and qualified as it. Like, I was, I think, the only junior woman for Canada to go that year, because there I was the only girl in my age category that was racing at that point.
Okay. Yeah. So that was kind of like, you touched on a little bit what I wanted to ask next, which is just sort of like, how crazy did this trajectory feel to you at the time? Or was it kind of the case that you almost didn't have enough perspective to know that it was as crazy as it was, or just like being so new to the sport and what and so on? Or
yeah, I mean, looking back at it now, it would be a completely different story, because there would probably be, you know, at least 4 to 5 other junior girls also racing, and their parents would be involved, and their parents would understand like the steps to take. You know, you do a provincial race, then you do a Canada Cup, and then you go and race internationally. But for me, I was just showing up with other people, and that was already what the path they were on. So I was like the yes girl. I was like, yeah, I really like racing and I'm doing pretty well at it. So sure, I'll try this race or I'll go here next. Looking back, yeah, it is crazy. And I think the normal, the normal path would not be to race internationally your second year. But I'm really happy that I had those experiences when I did. Now it's a different story. Now you'd qualify and you'd actually have a national committee saying if they're ready or not. I don't think the same thing would happen now, or it would be a really rare, really rare case for someone on their second year to get invited to world champs.
Totally. Yeah. And it's a very good case study in just how much the sport has, I don't know if you want to call it matured or whatever the right word is, but.
And now there is a committee.
But like, was there a point along this timeline where you had a moment of just being like, oh shit, I am suddenly in over my head on this? Or did it just feel like, yeah, I mean, I'm doing pretty well, so like, this makes sense. I don't know. We're good.
Yeah. I was in a really lucky scenario where I had, so at that point I didn't live with my parents anymore. I had moved out, but I had friends that had a really cheap spot like up on Whistler Mountain for me to rent, and I had a full-time job, so I was making money and not, I was saving quite a lot of money at the time living in Whistler, which I think that right there is that was kind of the breakthrough moment, is where I never felt like I was spending more money than I had. I was making decent money, working full-time, had a few jobs, and then was also just riding every day and loving it. And then I would take say a month or two off work and then go with friends overseas and pick and choose a few races. So at that point, I think I was flourishing. I was having the best time of my life, you know, 19, 20 years old, wasn't burnt out, really, really loved it. And I think I had a lot of fun. The only, if I were to have any regrets, it would just be that I wish that I had maybe decided enduro versus downhill early on, but the whole time I was picking and choosing, doing a little bit of both, which made it harder potentially to get properly sponsored. But it was really hard as a girl to get sponsored then anyways, and I did try. I tried really hard, and the best that I got was deals through like a loaner bike for the year, and not even really any budget. Like the travel costs all came from my pocket.
Yeah, certainly that sounds rough. And I guess, tell me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like it's become easier to make a path as a pro that doesn't necessarily involve racing these 100%. Days. You know, there's more options for just being a free rider or doing video work and a broader spectrum of ways that you can make a career.
Most definitely.
But I guess, yeah, tell us more about, like, you know, at that point, that was, you know, what I just said was certainly less true than it is today as of our recording. And you think that focusing on one of the racing disciplines over the other, whichever it may have been, just would have let you, I don't know, do better in one specific arena and therefore get attention as the person who's doing well at X? Or I don't know, what made that feel like a challenge?
Yeah, I think that when I would go to an EWS, I would go, and it was such a small community then that if something happened to my bike, or, you know, if you were struggling for a ride at that point, I felt like it was pretty welcoming, and you could ask anyone in enduro for a hand, for help getting to X race. Like, the pits were all quite small and everyone knew each other. So I really liked the feeling of being a privateer at the enduros. And I also felt like it was just way more value if I'm spending the same amount to go somewhere, but in a downhill race, I'm riding the same track the whole weekend. And if you have a mechanical, then that's your race done. Whereas an enduro, I did feel like there was a lot of value, and I had so much fun doing that kind of, just those weekends were amazing. And then, yeah, so for downhill, that was definitely my true passion. And just growing up at the bike park, not growing up at the bike park, but having the bike park in my backyard. Yeah, growing up for those 2 years, I definitely had that was the drive, was to be a downhill racer. But it just made so much more sense to go to the enduros as well. And ultimately, that is where I found my success, is when I was at the enduros, and then there was more opportunities for teams with enduro and support that way, whereas I never found anything with downhill, because for North American brands as well, you don't really see as much return sending a rider away to Europe, whereas there was lots of North American stuff going on for enduro then. So it is a tough one. I mean, I don't regret that, because even still, I love riding all sorts of things, and that's my favorite part about biking, is just keeping it fresh, going between trail biking and downhill. But when I look back, I'm like, oh, maybe if I had done more than just, you know, 3 EWSs and 2 World Cups in a year, I would have made those connections. But is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a hard thing to balance. And you know, you touched on the enduro racing scene at that time feeling just a little looser and a little more communal. And I'm guessing you'd attribute that just to it being a relatively nascent discipline at that point in time and not having quite hit the same level of, call it, professionalism, I guess. Well, obviously, times have very much changed on that front. And I guess, you know, obviously, as we'll kind of go a little deeper on in a sec here, you've gone through sort of a continued career evolution that's moving in a more free ride oriented direction these days. Not to pigeonhole or anything, but, you know, I think that's a fair assessment, right? And, does it feel like, you know, I mean, obviously you ride for DaVinci, they've wrapped up their enduro team, at least for the time being, and, you know, certainly are far from the only company to do so. Does it feel like the enduro racing at the professional level was just this, like, sort of flash in the pan that's fading out a little bit? Or I don't know, where do you see that going here as someone who's been in the thick of it for?
Yeah, that's such a tough one, because the format of enduro when it was like in its peak, I think is just, it was so amazing. And I wish there was a better way to be able to get that to the viewers and spectators, because it's kind of like enduro moto. It is always harder to watch than supercross, you know? There's always going to be challenges with getting that to viewers, and therefore brands putting money into it. But I'm in denial that it's over, you know. I think that it's possible, but I think that the industry is so new, and, you know, all of a sudden e-bike racing is a peak in what Europe, and I don't know what the industry is interested in putting money into. So I think it's growing really quickly and ever changing. I don't really know what the future of all of this is going to be, but I sure hope it's not the end. And I sure hope that we keep seeing, like, downhill getting easier to watch and all of these disciplines where they're not cutting numbers on how many racers are there. And it's not quite as an elitist, like, hard to watch thing. I want it to keep growing and be able to still watch, like, my favorite sport ever, which I don't think I really did any of that last year.
Yeah. I mean, fully co-signed on all that. And it's interesting because it's like, on one hand, enduro feels like it should be the most relatable thing in that it's kind of the racing discipline that is most similar to how the biggest number of people actually go ride their mountain bikes.
Yeah, the average consumer.
Right. On the other hand, it is just a harder thing to broadcast and make telegenic and all that than, say, either downhill or cross country, frankly. And, you know, I don't know how you bridge that gap. I don't know what the right sort of end point or end goal is either, but it feels like no one has quite fully cracked that particular nut, and it's going to be interesting to see how kind of the competing forces of just trying to capitalize on a sport that is interesting but maybe not the easiest thing to commercialize goes.
And I think that, I mean, technology is only getting better, right? So in that sense, technically it should only get easier to follow it or to remotely upload live stuff. But I mean, at that point, it's not even really up to the consumer. It's up to whoever has the most money and is putting the money in. So it's not even in anyone's hands anymore. It's like, yeah, up to the business guys. Yeah, so I don't know, but I sure hope not, because I do love enduro and where it was at. And I hope that, I mean, e-bikes are great and they have their place, but I would way rather see people on regular bikes racing.
Yeah. E-bike race, I mean, I've made this take before. This is not a novel thought from my end, but e-bike racing that involves timed uphill stages seems just absurd to me, because it's just a matter of who's
power
on the drive system that puts up. And you just put someone lighter on the bike and that's going to go faster now. Great. Like, congrats. You're.
Yeah. I mean, and then,
you know, maybe there's a way you fix that with like ballast for lighter or for, I don't know, but it just seems like a very contrived.
And to me, I'm like, sure, there's always a place for that, but I don't want that to be the pinnacle of enduro, basically. Like, I think that maybe this is a glimmer in time and e-bikes are booming, so that's where brands are making money. But I mean, yeah, maybe we'll look back in 4 years and be like, oh yeah, remember?
Why did we think racing those was a good idea? Right, exactly. Like, this is not me hating on e-bikes in general, but I think e-bike racing is dumb. And I do think there's maybe, what you said is exactly right, that like we're seeing e-bike racing get a bunch of money thrown at it because companies are making money selling e-bikes. And we're like, well, this is sort of the natural follow-on from that. And that seems poorly considered from
Which is why it's not really up to what's the most popular bike in the industry. It's up to the companies and what they want to sell or what, you know, it's funny thinking about it like that.
Well, right. But there's a disconnect between that and what makes for good racing. And you don't have to go race every bike in the universe. It's okay. Like, there are other ways to ride a bike, you know? So I don't know. We'll see what happens, which I guess, you know, speaking of not needing to race everything, you've been kind of making something of a pivot into doing more free ride oriented stuff of late. And, you know, obviously Da Vinci pulling out of enduro racing probably had something to do with that, but it wasn't like that was when you decided to start doing some free riding either. So did that feel like kind of a natural continuation of where you were already going, and how has that pivot gone?
Yeah, I think it's been the best timing ever with when I was already, even last year, I was still on the enduro team and on that enduro program, but all of a sudden there was these women's free ride event jump jams coming up, proving grounds. And I was like really getting pulled in that direction, which is ultimately probably always where I've wanted to be, but there's never been that opportunity. So last year, my team manager and I came to the agreement. They're like, yes, it is really valuable for you right now to go chase that, go to all those events you can. And like, no, you don't have to do 5 EWSs and a full free ride calendar. So that was really great because it was still valuable for the same sponsors. I still run the same stuff on my bike, but I'm just doing different events. And then this year, without even, it wasn't anything to do with what they wanted from me or vice versa. It just happened that they had already decided with no North American events on the enduro calendar. It was just too crazy for them. Da Vinci's on a massive company. And yeah, like you said, there's quite a few brands that have done the same thing. Like it wasn't valuable enough for them to track everything over to Europe when they're not seeing a return to their consumer base, which is mostly North America. So yeah, lucky for me. Yeah, they're focusing on this free ride bike, aluminum, made in Canada. And we actually just released our new team. So we have like a little free ride collective based in the Sea to Sky. And it's the absolute perfect fit. And I've never felt like it's a better brand alignment with Da Vinci and I. And this is like my 6th year with them. So it's very cool the way that we've kind of gone at the same pace.
Yeah. And it does make sense. You have a company that's doing the majority of their sales in North America, sending people to race in front of a European audience is probably not the best possible return on their investment there. So sure. Fair enough. But I guess, you sort of said there, like you were being drawn in the free ride direction to some extent already anyway. How did that, I don't know what the right term is, that phase of your career, or where did that pull come from, I guess, and what's motivated you on that front that racing wasn't quite doing for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I put a lot of eggs into the racing basket from, yeah, like I was saying, 18 till 24, really, before I was on a team. I was spending pretty much every penny that I made to get out to these races, try and get noticed. I was getting really decent results, but there just wasn't the space back then for more girls on teams. And then all of a sudden this doorway opened up into free ride. Like there's these women's jump jams and money's coming into free ride formation, events like this. So naturally, I'm going to go there, have the best week of my life, not have the pressure of racing, and also get more support for it. And I'm not saying that that's like the only reason was the support, but it just all of a sudden felt like it was exactly what I wanted to be doing. And I was more pushing myself into racing because that was the only avenue to make it a career or get support that way. Yeah, and it's really sad going back to the Da Vinci thing, because they have such these deep roots and these ties in racing. And I don't think any brand wants to pull out of racing. Like they want to be, being the pinnacle and the best race bike out there is, I think, the dream for all these companies. But if there's a calendar that doesn't have any races in your area, it's just kind of crazy unless you're top dog, massive brand. So it just worked out so well for me being already with them, and that was the direction they were going. But I know how hard it was for my team manager, who just loves racing. And yeah, it's a crazy one to be in for everyone, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly doesn't sound like an easy call to make. And but yeah, I mean, especially with bike sales slowing down a bit and budgets contracting some, yeah, maybe it is one you need to make. I do get that. So I guess that's probably a pretty good segue into just talking about the state of women's free ride in general. I mean, we had seemingly a ton of momentum behind it, like you said, just more events happening, and obviously the recent high profile lack of formation last year, plus no women being invited to Rampage, was not the continuation of that momentum that I think many of us were hoping for. But does it feel like there's still good stuff happening there? Or, I don't know, what do you want to see from the state of women's free ride going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when the first year that I went to Formation was their second year doing it, so 2021. And that for me was, I think, pretty eye-opening to have. I think their first year, it was safe. It was all the girls' first time in Utah, and they all pretty much collaborated on the same line or on a few other features. But then the second year, everyone was like, no, we're gonna build a line, we're gonna ride Rampage features, and we're gonna do this together. So there was the girls riding, and then I was there as a digger. And just having all of us come together, building features for each other, pushing each other on the off days, it was crazy. That was for me like the catalyst to get it all rolling. And then from there, I'd say it's really just been a natural progression on its own. I think having these introductory like development jump jams, same thing, just getting these girls together, because it's not necessarily that it never existed, but all of a sudden when you get to ride with these girls that are just as good, better than you, pushing really hard, whatever it is, that's how these things explode. So I think that women's free ride is in a great place, because now we all know each other, we're all pushing each other in the best possible ways, and now we just need the space to do that, which I think that does suck about Rampage and how Formation didn't go ahead. Also, there's things in the works, and I think that was just like one side of it. There's a lot of logistics to get girls into Rampage, and yeah, it's only a matter of time. But behind the scenes, there's now so many more events that are co-ed. They're not just only the dudes. It's like girls riding with the guys, girls tricking the jumps. Now there's girls in slope style at Crankworks. We're going to see that soon. And yeah, women's free ride is in a great place, and it is growing so fast. And all we need is just the door to stay open, you know, which I think it is. And I think there's so much more normalization. It's not like this weird thing that a girl is training to be a slopestyle athlete. It's like, well, no, there's an avenue for that now. So I think it's in a good place. I think it is crazy how quickly it shifted, and I think that's caught a lot of people off guard. And I think that's why there's this unrest. There's a lot of people who weren't ready for that shift potentially, but it's happening. Yeah.
It is, and it's great. I mean, glad to hear that your perspective is just still that there's strong momentum there. And certainly the fact that there's just, as you sort of said there, this very strong crew of women who are doing extremely impressive stuff and, you know, coalescing around Freeride as being their, you know, you included in this camp, certainly, just kind of the thing y'all want to be doing is great. And, but I guess, do you have sort of any particular thoughts or aspirations as far as just where you want to see women's free ride go from here?
Yeah. I mean, I think even now after a few years of, like, for example, Casey Brown and Hannah have done their own girls jump jams, and those are very much like development style events now. But 2 years ago, having a girls only jump jam where we're towing ourselves and towing each other into these jumps, that was a big move. And now look, there's going to be girls riding Crankworks gold slope style. So I just don't think there's any saying of what's going to happen 2 years from now, but I sure hope that that involves girls being at Rampage or just at the pointy end of these events. Just like how I would say surfing is going, where now it's like, you know, it's so hard to say, but.
Well, and to be clear, I'm not asking for predictions. I'm just saying what you want to see.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I want to see. I want to see girls at the same events in the same capacity. And that goes for racing, slope style, everything, like all disciplines. And if it doesn't happen, it's like the progression is still going to be there. It just halts it for, I think it delays it more for the girls coming up, if that makes sense. If there's no girls events or no girls at Rampage, it's really hard for an 11-year-old girl to watch it and be like, that's what I want to do. Whereas once you have that category, it really affects the girls coming up and they have these idols and they are able to look and dream about that's an avenue they want to go down. So maybe directly it doesn't affect the girls in the moment. They're still going to push as hard. It's not like, oh, we didn't go to Rampage. Like, okay, I just like won't try anymore. It's like you kind of want to try even harder and make that happen for the next couple of years. It does suck for us in the moment because it might not be something that we get to do for ourselves, but at least it will happen. The momentum's there.
No, I think that's really well put. And this is something we've talked about in a bunch of different facets of, like, you know, this being one context for it, but also stuff like the widowing of the field at World Cup downhill races and stuff. Like, yeah, sure, it's fine for the people who are at the top right now, but it's just very hard to imagine how that doesn't constrict development of upcoming riders and just feel like a, you know, impediment to the continued development of the sport going forward. And
totally, like, it's like an endless debate that Instagram and pink bike commenters will have. I'll just call them that, where if you say like, oh, I really wish there was more than 15 girls in the first qualies and only 10 in the finals, like, I think there should be more girls. And then you'll have the keyboard warriors like, oh, but there's like, you know, why would that be a thing? There's only 10 girls that race. And you're like, no, like, they cut it at 10. We should have more. Like, it's so funny how you're like, well, if they let more girls in, then more girls would get faster. And therefore the times will, you know, that's how that works.
So, yeah. More people are going to try. You're going to, it's going to build on itself. Yeah. You have to start somewhere.
I find it really funny how that's the argument. And I'm like, well, yeah, but the reasoning why that it's like less girls are going to go because there's only 10 girls to qualify.
Right. It's total chicken and the egg shit. And you have to have that avenue be open for people to pursue it.
Yeah. So that one's a funny one for me. And I think I've always had pretty tough skin in terms of that. Like, I'm not easily offended. I'm just sometimes dumbfounded by like how people can actually have those opinions. I'm like, wow, that's actually crazy that you think that way, because that's just such a close, like, it just blows my mind. So regardless if the options are open right away, I think that they just kind of get left in the dust, because the girls are going to continue to get better and more girls are going to continue to ride. And it's like, it's kind of crazy if girls never went to Rampage and an event similar to Formation happened that was girls only, you would be seeing girls absolutely pushing it and still getting better in this other doorway. It would just be crazy to me if it wasn't opened up, like if it was gender bias. It's just funny. So I'm really excited to see more things get into an even playing field. And yeah, I don't know. It's cool to watch and I'm happy to be a part of it, but it's also wild just hearing what people have to say and their opinions when they're really, I don't know, offside.
Yeah. I mean, just here's to that continuing and you all continuing to kind of kick that door in. And I guess that's maybe a good transition into just tell us about what's on tap for 2024 for you.
Yeah, I'm stoked for 24 with still kind of discovering, same thing, same as when I was 18, 19, I have all these different avenues that I want to do and that Da Vinci's keen for me to do. So this is kind of a figuring out year. I'm gonna jump into more like kind of fest-esque series rounds. So hitting some bigger jumps, going to Europe, continuing to do crank works, like speed and style and whip off events like that. But then I also am just trying to push myself with my own filming projects and working with DaVinci on that kind of stuff. I'm really interested in getting more creative and, yeah, doing things for myself. I think racing is pretty, I mean, yeah, racing you also do for yourself. So now that I've stepped back, I'm like just seeing the bigger picture and actually being like, what do I want to see in the sport, or what do I want for myself if I were to look back on? So yeah, I'm excited to get creative behind the lens and in front of the lens.
Good teaser. Looking forward to seeing the fruits of that.
Thanks.
And I guess that's probably a good note to end on, but this has been a blast. Appreciate you coming on and just telling some stories and sharing your perspective on the state of the mountain bike.
Yeah, having a chat.
Thanks again. This has been great.
Thank you.
All right. That's it for this edition of Bikes and Big Ideas. And as always, we would very much appreciate you leaving us a rating or review in your podcast player of choice to help keep the show going and growing. I'd also like to say thanks to Georgia for the conversation. Thanks to Taylor Ahern for producing the episode. And thanks to you for listening. From all of us at Blister, please take good care of yourself and everybody else. And we'll be back again next week. Bye, everybody.